All right, y'all, on today's episode of Nothing Major, we will be previewing the first major of the year, the Australian Open, from the biggest threats to Sinner's title defense to the tournament's biggest dark horses. You guys are going to want to listen to that. We then get into our predictions with a special Aussie Open-themed snake draft. We are big fans of the snake draft here on the pod, so we're looking forward to doing that today. And then before that, we're going to wrap up with some of our best memories from competing down under. I unfortunately wasn't around for that segment. Didn't have much to tell y'all anyways. Never did that well down there. Was my least favorite slam, and I stand by that. So I'll let the rest of these three here talk about their amazing experiences down in Melbourne over the years.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to Nothing Major. Got John Isner, Steve Johnson. I think Jack Sock is joining us in a little bit. He's out in Palm Springs playing a pickleball tournament. We've also got the production team at SIFT and our executive producer, Charlie Fox, with us, as we do every week. Before we get started, I want to apologize to Thanasi Kokkinakis. I apologized to him privately like 10 times, but we were supposed to have him on the podcast like 2 weeks ago. And being the idiot that I am, I couldn't figure out the time zones in Australia and California. He was there at the right time, right spot, texting me like, where are you at? I'm like, I messed this up. So I'm going to be cheering for Thanasi at the Australian Open. And I just want to dedicate the entire episode to Thanasi Kokkinakis. And I'm sorry I wasted your time.
And Sam, I think you owe another apology to Nothing Major Nation.
Yes. Yeah.
No, really I do. Want to hear that interview. We will get him back on the pod for sure. Great guy. He didn't take, didn't take any offense to that. So, but Nothing Major, we will get him on.
That is on me. All right, we got the Australian Open starting. I'm going to go to John here. A lot of people say it's like the happy slam. They got a lot of cool, player hospitality things that are a part of it. Do you think it really is like the most fun slam and happy slam? Or do you think a lot of it is players have had, 6 weeks off and it's kind of like the start of the new year? They're just generally in a happier mood to get down to Australia.
That's a good point. No, I do think it's the happy slam. I mean, all the slams are fantastic. We know that. But Australia, I think players, for the most part, players in the States, players in Europe, as you know, are leaving cold weather places and then getting down to Australia where the weather is extremely warm. South Americans, they're not doing that. It's warm down there. But most players are leaving cold weather places, going down to Australia. It is a pretty happy and jovial mood all the time in Melbourne. So yes, I would say it's the happy slam. They do take care of the players extremely well. As you know, when you check in, they give you that little player stipend right away of like 20. Now it's 5,000.
Is it really?
I think, but it was just $2,500. I remember you guys, right? And then you take it and you immediately take it to the purser's office and you get 2,500 Aussie cash, which is like $800. And then you go lose it at the casino. Whatever. Yes. It was kind of, sort of like a rite of passage every year at the Aussie Open. But yes, I would say it's a happy slam. They take care of you very well, very well. The hospitality is great. The food's incredible. The site's awesome. The locker rooms, blah, blah, blah. Hotels are easy. It's a big city, Melbourne, but doesn't have that big city feel like New York City or maybe even Paris. To me, it doesn't. So yeah, happy slam.
You agree, Stevie? Or do you think, let's say they flipped it and the French Open was in January and the Australian Open was in May. Do you think everyone would be saying, oh, the French Open's the happy slam. Everyone's in a good mood. They're just walking around saying Happy New Year when you see everyone.
No, probably not. I think that's dedicated to Australia. I always had a great time down there. The fans, it's amazing. They're always in a good mood. It's summer down there. I always stayed down on the right by the water, really close to the courts. So just cruising around, it was very enjoyable. The mood was always, not that intense, you'd think, for like a grand slam, just because we haven't played in a while. So everyone's just kind of happy to be back. I always enjoyed it down there. And for me, it was definitely the happiest and, let's say, the least stressful of any of the slams, for me at least.
John hinted on it. The player experience down there, first you get that little stipend check, but then they'd always have trips to the zoos. The one year they had the girls on rollerblades, like rollerblading around. If you had questions, Stevie, I feel like you don't remember that.
Was that on the grounds or like
on the grounds?
Yeah, like in the hallways. Yeah. It was, and they're always building new player areas. They were the first slam. I don't know if the other ones do this. You get 5 free rackets strung a day. they would really make the players feel like, gosh, this is like the greatest place on earth. And it's still like that as far as I can tell. But do you think playing in Melbourne was the, as far as like conditions go, I'll go back to John, like the toughest place to play of the four majors with how hot it would get? And sometimes honestly really cold at night. I mean, we've all played there at night too. It's giving me like freezing cold.
I actually think the hottest slam, truthfully, is the US Open.
Yep.
At times. It can for sure still be steamy in New York City in late August, early September. The heat down in Australia, I don't want to be that guy that says that, you know, it's hot, but it's not that humid. Well, that's kind of the case down there.
That is the case, though.
I know, but I feel like a dork saying that.
It was always over-exaggerated how hot it was in Australia. It's always 100 degrees. There was like a couple years where it was 100, but...
1 year was absurd. I can't remember what year it was. It was insanely hot. It was like playing in an oven. I will say that much. But having said that, a lot of the days it'd be like, we're talking, you know, Fahrenheit now. It'd be like, even during the day, it'd be like 65 degrees, kind of chilly. And then at night, it can turn like really, really cold. So no, I don't think the conditions were that big of a deal. I always found of the slams, I think the US Open was the hardest because when it would get hot in New York, it was really tough.
Stevie, if you had to win a major, is the Australian Open the last major you want to win? Or did I phrase that right? Is it the least prestigious?
Yeah, just because, I mean, for me, I mean, I think I've already said it here for sure. Like US Open's one, Wimbledon's two. And then I think the third would just be the French because objectively it'd be hilarious to see my name on the trophy. And then, you know, Australia would be obviously the last of that four. But I enjoyed, that was one of my favorite slams, you know. So, I mean, I enjoyed that slam much more than I enjoyed the French. But
I didn't even like the French Open. I didn't even like clay, but I would much rather win the French Open than the Australian Open.
It would just be funnier to see my name on there, like long term.
Are you guys, it's a little easier for Stevie and I on the West Coast to watch the Australian Open. Starts a little earlier. Like, John, are you going to, if there's a big match this year and it's 11 p.m. midnight, are you staying up to watch?
No. But I will wake up early, as I always do, and either immediately turn on ESPN to see if there's a match still going on, check my phone, you know, obviously see if there's some matches going on. Yes, I'll flip it to ESPN, but I'm not staying up for that. That's not because I don't love tennis. That's because I can't keep my eyes open. I'd have to physically pry them open that late. So there's not much that can keep me up at 10, 11 p.m.
But is there one match that you guys had as like kids or kind of growing up that you did stay up for? Like I stayed up to like, because I remember like for me, I stayed up late on the West Coast to watch the Baghdatis Federer final in 2006. I believe it was 2006. But that's the last time I stayed up and was like, I'm going to stay up and watch this tennis match, you know, from start to finish. And I don't think I have done that since. Not even for the, you know, Novak Rafa final or Novak's, you know, any of those matches I didn't stay up for.
I remember watching Roddick and Elinawi back in the day, but I didn't stay up for it. I think I like honestly got home from school and it was still on. It was one of those matches that went till 2, 3 a.m. and I got home, or it must have been in the morning before school started. It's like, oh, they're at 18-all on the fifth. And so that was the last, or maybe the most memorable match I remember watching as a kid at the Australian Open.
That was the one match I remember before I started playing the Australian Open. I remember that match more than I remember like the Agassi and Sampras and Courier playing and winning down there. I don't know. That one just sticks out to me.
Yeah, same. We were all a little young, like the Sampras, Agassi, Courier, 10, 11 years old. I don't think anyone was like staying up till like 10 p.m. watching that. But regardless, this is going to be a fun tournament. I go a little... I'm a little different compared to what John said, the happy slam. I think everyone's just in a good mood at the Australian Open because they haven't played a tournament in 6 weeks. And regardless of what tournament they're going to, they're optimistic about how their year is going to go. And they're excited to be, at a new event. But we're...
If I can add one more thing, you're not that crispy, you know, because you've had some time off.
Totally.
And the doubles players taking up the training tables, it's not annoying you that much early on in the year.
No.
Now, the doubles guys taking up all the tables in October, you're a little perturbed at that. But early on, you got like a nice runway of emotional, strength that you can give out in January.
You got a longer leash, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yep, you guys are exactly right. So we'll see. We'll see who takes the titles on the men's and women's side this year. All right, I'm going to pass it to John. He's going to go over some of the big storylines at the Aussie Open for 2025.
Still no Jack. He is coming on imminently. He might be popping in right as we're in the middle of this segment. So let's talk American-centric podcasts here. Who do we think on the men's and the women's side is going to be the last player standing for the Stars and Stripes this year down under in Melbourne? Stevie, let's start with you. Give us your pick on the men's and women's side as the last American standing.
Ooh, I think on the men's side, I think I'm going to go with Tommy Paul. You know, I think he got down there a little later. I don't know. He's had a good run down there to the semis before. I think he's used to it, knows what it feels like. So, you know, I'm going to go with him. I know Taylor's had an incredible week, you know, leading up to the event with the United Cup and everything. So he obviously, I think, has an equal, if not, you know, better chance. But I think Tommy will get it done on the men's side. And I think on the women's side, I'm going to go with Jessie Pegula. She just made the finals. Well, not just, but at the US Open in late 2024. So she's been there. She has some experience under her belt. Hopefully she can get to another final and get it done. So I'm going to take her as the last American female standing.
Sammy.
I'm just going with the two highest ranked players. I'm going with Fritz. One, he's going to have a good draw, and he's playing well off the United Cup win. And then Coco Gauff. I don't care what the women's rankings are right now. Coco Gauff's the best player in the world at this moment. And I think she's going to win the Australian Open, therefore being the last American female alive in the draw. So Coco Gauff, Taylor Fritz.
Yeah, I'm going to piggyback off you, Sam. I'm just going to go straight chalk. Taylor and Coco, they both played and won the United Cup. Second year in a row, the United States won the United Cup. Taylor, as we know, like the guy doesn't even need an offseason. He played so late into the year, making the finals in Turin, playing so many matches. He, you know, has a few weeks at home, goes down to Australia a couple days before Christmas, and just battles it out and helps lead the USA to another United Cup victory. Now he's got, what, we're Monday, he's got a full week off in Melbourne to kind of rest up, practice, get sharp, full of confidence. I would imagine he's got the most match wins going into the Aussie Open. So he's fully confident. I'm going Taylor and I'm going Coco. She beat Swiatek at the United Cup. Not going out on a limb there. So I'm with you, Sam. Taylor and Coco.
Can we give a shout out to Stevie's favorite player, Kaney Shikori, who finaled the tournament last week?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Stevie's 2024 comeback player of the year.
You know what? Early take, 2025 most improved player.
All right, get out of here. This.
He's going to go from 100 to top 10.
You'll vote for him no matter what.
Good point, Sam. Big shout out to Kaney Nishikori, Stevie's favorite player. Two guys with similar backhands, just ball striking wizards on the backhand side. How about a shout out to the bot, the junior bot, Riley Opelka, for making the final. Now, look, we all talked about, we know what he's capable of. Yes. The one concern is his body. He wasn't able to finish the final, you know, playing five competitive matches, and one of which beating Djokovic, insane effort, took a toll on his body. He told me it was a back thing. Yeah. I don't know. He's going to have 8 days to get ready for Melbourne, so hopefully he can heal up. But that's a hell of an effort. He hasn't played many matches.
Yeah.
Played the U.S. Open on a protected ranking, lost first round, played some challengers after that. Didn't do that well, truthfully. But great result for Riley. He's without his protected ranking, and he still has so many left. I don't know. He had 12 of them because he was out for so long. I think typically you get like 8 or something, but if you're out for more than
a year, I think it changes. 6 months is one thing.
But even his ranking as it is like 150. So he's tracking to get back into the top 100 if he stays healthy, and we all wish him the best there.
Do you guys watch that? He obviously served well against Novak, but he was ripping balls from the ground. Oh. He was beating him from the ground.
He's got a new racket?
New racket.
Ripping and moving. Okay, we're the same height. How well does that guy move?
He moves a lot better than you.
I'm taking him in a 100-yard sprint over anyone on tour. I'm taking Riley Opelka. Ask Tommy Paul.
I'm with you. I'm agreeing with you.
Straight line?
Yeah.
We're not doing shuttle drills side to side. None of this stuff. I'm taking him. Tommy Paul. Yeah. Tommy Paul says that Riley dusts him in 100-yard sprint.
He's got that big stride. It's like 9 feet long.
Big stride. He's quick. He was moving well. His backhand's incredible. But his forehand
Yep.
From the little bit, obviously I'm watching highlights on like tennis TV and whatnot. So they're showing the really good points, but his forehand was seemed to be with like great margin. It wasn't spraying it here and there. He was staying, you know, staying in these baseline rallies with Djokovic and then, you know, only person to break GMP the whole tournament. So look, he played great and he's got a new racket. If you guys notice that.
Yeah. He was out in LA in December. I was with him a few days. Guy's playing really good. Just needs to be healthy. That's it.
Exactly. I mean,
everyone knows that. Nobody wants to see him in Australia going forward. If he is healthy, there is not a single draw in the world that he is not going to be a favorite in with his serve, his movement.
Here's a good one. Give us, if you can, off the top of your head, we know Riley's one of them, okay, for all of us. For you guys, on the men's side, give us two other players, unseeded players, that no seed wants to see in the first round. I think we all agree Riley's one of them.
Can we just say anybody outside the top 32? Because I don't know if anybody's missing.
Yeah, it's everyone else. Anyone outside?
Yeah.
We have a list here.
All right.
Yeah.
Matteo Berrettini. Yeah.
There you go. Good one.
No one wants to see him.
I would agree there.
I mean, obviously, you guys know who I'm going to say.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a good one. It's a good one.
Are you going to say Kenesha Corey?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's
why not?
Oh, I don't know, man.
I'm just going to keep doing this to annoy Sam.
You can just like best serve on tour and see if he's going to say, Kenesha Corey. I mean, I know it's like, it's not fast, but he hits the angles. Stevie will make a case for him.
I got another one.
He's also 9-0 against me. So yeah, he's very good.
And he's like, he's got this insane 5-set record, like the greatest of all time 5-set record. I'll go Cameron Norrie. He's like 50.
Yep.
He used to be really good. He hasn't been playing well in like 2 years.
I think he was hurt. I'm taking Cameron Norrie is like, unless you're Djokovic or someone, if you're seeded 20, like you don't want to see Cameron Norrie in the first round of the Aussie Open. The guy's a competitor. He's healthy. So I'm going Opelka one. Talking first round matches. Guys, you don't want to see Berrettini, Cameron Norrie for me. Jack Sock has joined us.
Sorry, guys.
No, you're good.
What's up? Give us at the top of your head. You got 4 seconds, an unseeded player at the Australian Open who no one wants to play.
Can you give me 34 seconds?
Nope.
Because I don't know who's unseeded and not unseeded.
Five, four, three.
I don't know who's ranked where. Radu Albot. No, I don't want that. You give me Nicholas Jarry in there. He's kind of dangerous at times and playing better.
Dude, I think Nicholas Jarry is so good.
He is good.
That's a good pick.
Oh, God. We're missing an obvious one, actually.
Jack's missing an obvious one here.
A former pod guest, the Mercurial Nick Kyrgios.
Yeah.
I mean, does a seed want to see him? I don't know.
No.
I don't think so, yeah.
Depends on the day you get from him, I feel like.
Even if he wasn't playing well, they don't want to see him. Just for like, who knows? It's so uncertain. Like, what's going to happen?
I agree.
All right, let's move on. Stick to the men's side. We know who the top two favorites are. Not the top two seeds, the top two favorites. Sinner and Alcaraz. Do you think that's accurate? Do you think they should be the top two favorites? Or do you think anyone else? We know Sinner's number one defending champ, number one in the world by a mile. But do you think anyone else should be the second favorite ahead of Alcaraz? Stevie?
Nope. I think they have that. They've hit the nail on the head on that one. Yannick, like we've talked about, you know, if the roof, you know, happens to be closed, then it becomes an indoor tournament and he's unstoppable in those.
Good point.
But other than that, he's won the tournament. The guy is playing insane tennis. And Carlos, conversely, is trying to get the, you know, all four slams at age 21, which is absolutely insane. So, you know, he is going to be extremely motivated to win the Australian Open because there's just not that many records to be broken at the moment. You know, they're a long way from breaking records, but this is one that he has a chance to break and to, like, I believe set the record. I thought I was reading earlier today that at 21 would be the youngest guy to do it. So, but yeah, so those two guys are the favorites, I think, for sure. And then I would say Sasha's the next one in line. You know, I just think he's been knocking at the door, and I think going in as the two seed, but kind of completely overlooked is a good thing for him. Maybe he can kind of get through the first week, basically under the radar as much as you can be as the two seed, and then get rolling in the second week.
I feel like, yes, they're the favorites, but they won all four slams last year. Are Sinner and Alcaraz going to win all four slams this year? It's just like, no. I'll take the field over Sinner and Alcaraz.
Okay, so that's a good one. You're taking the field. That's a very good question.
Yeah.
Field or Sinner Alcaraz? I'll go Sinner Alcaraz.
I'm taking the field.
You could probably find that bet out there. It's probably You know, like that's the actual Zverev.
I get Djokovic.
Yeah, you get everyone. You get
all the other guys that
Adrian Mannarino.
Mannarino, Radu Albot. Yeah.
He just might get your name.
Cam Nori, Kei Nishikori.
Jack, you taking those two guys of the field?
I think Sasha is two behind Sinner, in my opinion. I think he's coming off, what, the year-end win. I think, like Stevie said, he's been knocking at the door. I think he's playing, obviously, I think the best tennis of his career probably. I mean, he's serving gigantic. He's always dangerous. Seems like he likes those conditions down there as well. Doesn't mind the heat and the long matches and all that. So in my personal opinion, I'm going to go Sinner and Zverev as top two. And I would take those two over the field.
Let's move on to the greatest tennis player of all time, greatest player of all time, Novak Djokovic. Do you guys feel like he's a little bit under the radar going into this tournament? Open up to y'all. Sam, do you think Novak's flying under the radar this year in Melbourne?
No, I think the average sports fan still assumes he's like number one in the world and the greatest player right now. So to the tennis nut who like follows tennis all the time, kind of knows that he hasn't had the results that have been up to his standards over the last year. But no, he's won it 10 times. He's going to be feeling good. He's still just on a global level. People know who he is, and they expect him to win it or be in the final.
Yeah, it's interesting because I was there at the match that he lost at the US Open in 2024, and he just looked disinterested, and rightfully so. He had completed, you know, what he wanted by winning Paris, the Olympics last year. And, you know, I'm interested to see how he looks, you know, mentally, physically, emotionally early in this tournament, because he just didn't even look like he kind of was there in New York. So there's nothing left for him to accomplish. So he's got to find reasons to stay motivated, and hopefully he can, because if he is, you know, willing and able to do that, he is going to be in the quarter, semis, finals, and have a very good chance to win it.
No, I think, yeah, I think the answer to the question for me, I think he's always on everyone's radar, but even more so this year, simply because who his coach is. So like all eyes are going to be on Andy Murray in the coaching box with him on the court. So just added attention to him, which I think he'll like. In my mind, he's the third favorite to win after those two guys. So
I agree with you.
All right, real quick, of the top eight seeds on the men's side, who is most susceptible? I'll name the top eight guys. You know, Sinner, Zverev, Alcaraz, Taylor, Medvedev, Casper Ruud, Djokovic, Demonauer. Who's the most susceptible to an early round loss? I feel like there's an easy answer here. Okay, say it, Sam.
Casper Ruud. The courts are fast. Sometimes they don't resurface the Aussie courts. He just doesn't like the fast courts. I hope he proves us all wrong.
Same.
And makes it quarters, semis, finals, or wins it.
It's also hard because he's going to be on the outside courts that are faster, right? Like, and we all know Laver, McCain, or whatever it's called, is slower. So he's going to be on the outside courts, which are pretty, pretty darn fast. So,
but, you know, he played well at the United Cup and he made the finals of the US. You know, we know what he's capable of, but I think he's the answer.
True. He went undefeated at the United Cup, but didn't get through pool play.
Are you guys shooing in Demonar to go farther at Aussie than Casper?
Yes.
I just think with home the crowd on his side, and he's seated eighth. So like he can, you know, theoretically he's going to be the favorite going into every match until the quarterfinals.
He'll be playing like fun night matches on Laver and stuff.
All right.
We are going to have a little segment here, a snake draft of the Australian Open, the men's side of the draw. A little recap, the snake draft works. We are going to go Sam, John, Jack, myself, and then we go reverse order. So myself, Jack, John, and Sam. We are going to be picking guys, one guy from each category. There'll be 1 through 10 ranking, 11 through, we're going to call it 35. So you guys can pick a guy that is seated, and then a bit of a dark horse, I guess, 36 through the rest of the field. And the guy who wins will have their team of three players will have the most match wins in Australia. And I think we've decided that the fans are going to send in some requests on some punishments. So we are going to start here with Sam. He is our first pick here in the snake draft, and he is going to be able to go first for a guy 1 through 10. So So, Sam, the floor is yours.
All right, 1 through 10, I'm going Novak Djokovic with my number one pick.
Nothing to be said there.
I feel like John is, like, surprised. Wow. Or what, I mean, what
I'm shocked.
No, and sorry, not to give a bit of a reference here for those listeners, or sorry, for those viewers on YouTube, John had some technical difficulties with his computer charging, so he is laying down in the closet, it looks like, and finishing this pod out, grinding it out for us here, the back end of a fifth set of a Nothing Major podcast. So with that being said,
yeah.
John, who is your first pick of a player ranked 1 through 10 for the Aussie Open snake draft?
Yannick Sinner.
Thought that was going to go first, but good call.
Yeah, yes. Same. I'm next up. Between two, I'm going to go with Sasha Zverev.
Okay. Then I guess I'll take the obvious choice or the last obvious choice here. I'm going to go with Alcaraz as my 1 through 10 pick. So now we are going to jump to...
Those are the most basic three choices.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do? The top 10, it's
yeah,
just...
what are you going to do? Like,
yeah, there's nothing to be...
Zverev wasn't basic.
If you weren't going to take him, I was going to take him.
You said earlier in the pod that he was the second favorite.
I know. That's why I went with it.
If you chose Alcaraz.
I knew it. I knew it. That's honestly why I veered this way.
Yeah. But, you know, the top four picks, I think everybody can kind of gather here. Those are pretty self-explanatory in the top 10. Now we are going to get to some juicy picks. I get a start. I'm sure you guys will have no problems with me picking somebody here from 11 to 35. So we want them to be seated. And I am going to go with Hubert Hurkacz.
Oh, man. I had him on my list. I was going to take him.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Hubert Hurkacz here. He's got the new coach. We've talked about the super coach, new racket, played well down under in United Cup. So he is going to be my pick from 11 through 35. And now we will jump back to Jack here.
Yeah.
His second
thing. Mine's not far off of the front of this list ranking wise, but he's got some great memories down in Australia. He is a friend of all of ours. He is plays for the Red, White, and Blue. I'm going with Tommy Paul. He is a fitness machine. He's a human backboard, and I think he's going to win a lot of matches down there.
It's a good pick. I mean, he made semis there. I think he's ready for a deep run.
Mine was well. I was either going through guy ranked 12 or guy ranked 30. I didn't know which one.
All right. Perry card's too obvious right now.
Dude, as fast as those cards are, though,
I know, but it's like the hot pick of the moment, Perry card.
Okay.
Wait. Our ultimate bot could go that direction.
Yeah. No, I'm not going with him. Okay. I'm not going with him. I'm going with Jiří Lehečka.
Okay. What? Yeah. Right. Love that.
John's out of it. You guys don't have to vote
on
his team.
He won. Jack, do you know he won Brisbane?
He just won. He got two.
He got
hold
two
on.
Retirement.
Hold on.
Cool. He won at 250. Sick.
Let's talk about this. Two retirements back to back, semis and finals. One more than John had in his entire career. 1,000 matches. How do you feel about that, John?
Yeah. I mean, I get it. Like, no one, like, you go and play a bot, you can like play that match with the broken leg, but you'd figure like with the amount of matches that I played, like close to 900 matches or something like that, I would have had one like before the match walkover, never had one my entire career. I had one, as you mentioned.
I'll never forget that day.
Who was I playing? I was playing that guy Vezeli at the US Open. And I was up 2 sets to love in a break, and I'm looking at him, and I was praying that he would not retire because I didn't want to get it that way. So I had one mid-match retirement my whole career. I wish I went my whole career without any. But
I was praying in the locker room that you would get a retirement so I could remind you of that daily.
Yeah, no, I thought that towards the end of my career in a big match, I would get one, like maybe like the semis of some big tournament. Nope, never happened. But anyways, Lehečka is my pick. I'm going with it. Poke holes in it all you want, guys. That's my pick.
All right. I'm going Sebastian Korda. Yeah, you guys like that pick.
That's a good pick.
I know. It's a great pick.
It's a good pick. Happy for you.
He like hurt his back. He like pulled out of Brisbane.
He did? Yep.
Question marks there.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Still like it though. Still like it for you.
So I like it too.
Classic salmon and a snake draft.
All right. So now we are going to jump to the real dark horses. 35 to whatever. Pick anybody you'd like. This could go a lot of different directions.
All right,
and we will start back with Sam and see what he comes up with.
I'm gonna botch this name right now.
Can't wait.
Zhizhen Zhang from China.
Okay.
Great ball striker. The courts are fast. I watched him play last night in Adelaide. Lost first round. A lot of times, though, you see these guys lose first round early before slams. They have a run. I'm going with that. Xu Zhang Zhang.
I like it.
I'll go with, man, this is a very draw dependent, as you know, that hopefully these guys don't draw.
This is the fun part.
I'll go with Arnaldi.
Ooh. Of Italy. Teo Arnaldi. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that guy.
He's smooth. Looks like he's always having fun out there.
Riley beat him 6-6. Like, you know, he's good. He's good.
I was gonna say Nick, but I don't know. I think that's a too big of a question mark. So I'm gonna go with someone down at the 82 spot, one Botich von de Zonschloops. He ended someone's career that was very good. He balled out at Davis Cup. So he's taking some confidence into the preseasons in the Maldives, and he's gonna come out hot and crush it in Melbourne. So Botich von de Zonschloops is my round out my team.
Do you think he lost first round of Auckland Qualies? So he's gonna have a lot of time.
He lost first round of qualies in Auckland?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And as someone just said, you have all this time, and that's where these people make these big runs and they get a lot of practice.
Got a lot of time.
Okay, sorry, I went out on a limb here. Jeez.
There's somebody that I'm gonna pick here, and I know Sam's not gonna like it.
I know who you're picking. We all know who you're picking.
Kei Nishikori at 74. Come on.
Oh, he just wasted all of his wins in Hong Kong.
No. He's going to get down there. He's ready to go. As long as he's healthy, I'm good. Kei Nishikori will be my pick. So we are going to circle back, though. So Sam had the first pick, and he just went with Novak. No thought process to Sinner, Alcaraz, Zverev.
Yeah, only the 10-time Grand Slam or Australian Open champion.
I agree with you, but like you had the first pick, and you know none of the young guys interested you.
I want to cheer for Novak.
Okay, fair.
Well, he wants to shed another tear for him.
Yeah.
The only person he's ever shed a tear for. So he's got a soft spot for him in his heart. And with that, that is our teams. Quick recap of the teams that we have for our Aussie Open snake draft. Jack has Alexander Zverev, Tommy Paul, and Botik van de Zandschulp. Wow, those are good names. John has Novak Djokovic, Jiří Lehečka, and I can't remember. Oh, Matteo Arnaldi, correct? I have taken Carlos Alcaraz, Hubie Hurkacz, and Kei Nishikori. And Sam has taken Novak Djokovic, Sebastian Korda, and Zijin Zhang. So we are going to see who ends up with the most match wins out of our little pods of three here in the Australian Open.
So that's how we're doing it, match wins.
Yeah, each match win gets you a point. So we'll have to, you know, if there's tiebreakers or whatever, whoever goes the farthest, we'll go there. So that's the strategy.
Okay.
So you need some draw luck from the guys outside the top 35 to not play, yep, you know, somebody first round, and that's it.
I actually think I have the best team. Like I really do. So anyways.
Yep. It's good to have that confidence. You've done really well in the polling, I think, in the last few.
It's the defending champion.
Yeah, it's Sinner. That's a good start.
Champion.
Yeah.
And champion. Champion. It's this Italian guy.
And Matteo Naldi. That's a good pick. I like John's picks. And with that, we are going to get into our favorite memories from Down Under. And Jack, as he has politely said, is not his favorite event. So he is not going to be joining us for this segment. So with that, let's get to it.
All right. As we know, Aussie Open's around the corner. All of us played that tournament many, many times. I want to hear some very good memories you guys had from that tournament. And some of your worst memories, some of your worst losses, worst times in Melbourne, whatever it may be, let's air that out right now. So, Sammy Q, let's start with you. What is probably your best memory of all your trips down to Melbourne?
Year one, 2007. My first Australian Open, I was staying the week before I practiced with Andy Roddick, and then I stayed at the Crown Casino my first year ever, which I had no business staying there first year. It's like, as you guys know, it's like a really nice hotel. Anyway, I'm there and I've probably been there for a couple days and I'm getting in the elevator in the lobby. And I can't remember if like the same time I got in with this person or they're waiting in there, but it was Roger Federer. And we're both in the elevator at the same time. I'm obviously nervous. I'm like 18 years old, first time playing a major. and he just introduced himself. He's like, "Hey, Sam, I'm Roger. Nice to meet you. Like, welcome to the tour." Like, super cool. Wow. Yeah. And did you guys know, like, Federer, a bit of a tennis nerd. Like, he follows along with, like, challenger results during the year. He knows the up-and-comers. So it was super cool. He, like, reached out and probably knew I was nervous and introduced himself to me. And, like, that is my favorite Australian Open memory I've ever had.
So if he didn't say anything, were you just going to stay silent the whole time and just be like, act like you didn't know who he was?
No, I'm just probably like, no. He would have known that I knew who he was.
Of course.
But yes, I would have just stayed there silent. Like, I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah.
I don't. What would you say to him? What would go back to your own 18-year-old self? You get in the elevator and see Federer for the first time. You'd be like, "What's up, bro?"
That's a good point.
That's a good point.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's tough. But yeah. He made the first move, and pretty cool.
I had a funny memory with Roger down there. It was 2020. This was like, you know, right before all the COVID stuff, and they were having those crazy like fires down in Australia. So everything was kind of like mixed up. But I ended up playing him first round. He hadn't played, I don't think, maybe. You know, I don't think he played ATP Cup or anything. So, like, it was his first tournament. I actually had won a challenger the week before, so I thought I was, like, playing well. I get out there. I mean, it's just a roadhouse. I mean, it was 3-2-1. I mean, it was bad. Bad, bad, bad. And, you know, that long walk from the locker room out to Laver, it's, like, a pretty long walk. You go by all the champions, whatever. We finish the match. He does his interviews, right, like, on court, all this stuff. Somehow, I get back to the locker room. I didn't, like, I mean, there's no dilly-dallying around. Like, I just gotten just shellacked. Get back there. I feel like I take, like, 2 minutes to, like, shower or whatever. I come back out, and Roger's, like, just standing there, like, in his fully showered, fully dressed in a nice tracksuit, hair's done perfectly, like, getting ready to go do, like, a Rolex sponsorship or something. I'm like, how did you do all these interviews? Like, finish the match, sign 1,000 autographs, and somehow get done into the locker room, like, ready to go. Like, it was basically like a walk in the park for him. But it was funny because I remember when I shook his hand, I mean, I really thought, like, you know, we go back to thinking that we believed. I thought I had a chance. I shook his hand. I was like, played good today, huh? He goes, "Yeah, that was a good day for me." And I was like, well, an hour and 12 minutes later, it was a good day. So why don't you know? But it was just funny because I don't know how he was so buttoned up or dialed in that he got back to the locker room before me after doing like the on-court interview, signing autographs. I mean, the guy's just a magician, and I just sat there and laughed. I was like, well, I guess I'll fly home tomorrow and go to Dallas or Delray, whatever the next tournament was.
Stevie, what you failed to mention is he also hit the practice courts after that match because he beat you so comprehensively. So he's able to do the press, you know, sign autographs and do practice.
He didn't actually
have
to hit the practice court because Laver was the practice court that day. Like,
that's a good point.
That was like batting practice for him. Like, he, you know, basically didn't even have to take like the donut off the bat. He just swung it a couple times, got out of there on like a Monday at 3 p.m. Couldn't have been happier. And I was like, well, we'll just book these flights home.
I saw some Federer stat the other day. I don't have it in front of me, but it was like number of times a player has won a match in a major in under 90 minutes.
He was like 60 something.
He was like, yeah, like 65. And the next best was like Novak at 21. Like, he's the most efficient player like anyone's ever laid eyes on.
I'm definitely one of those.
Probably one of my best memories in Australia, I played Nalbandian in this match. I think it was like second or third round. I played him on court 2 or 3 or whatever it was called. And it was 5 sets. And like kind of later in the 5th set, he had a break point and I hit a serve up the tee. And it was called in. So, like, the crowd made a lot of noise. Like, they were cheering for him, by the way. Let me get this right. It was just really raucous there, right? Because the place was crowded. And Nalbandian, and I saw him do this. He made a gesture, like, challenge. Like, you know, like, go like this with his hand or something. And I actually thought the serve was out. You know, I just, from my vantage point, it was close, but I did feel like it was out. And I'm like, shoot, he's challenging this. But the umpire didn't see that he went like this or whatever, like, for the challenge. And then he's walking around, and like 7 seconds later, he goes to the umpire and he goes, "Challenge." He goes, "No, I didn't see you challenge it." And Nalbandian like lost it. And I think they ended up showing it after the fact and it was out.
Oh,
it could have been match point or something. It was at least a virtual match point because if he breaks me, he's going to win the match. And I ended up winning that game, winning in five sets, and he lost it, absolutely lost it. That was probably my favorite memory from Australia, is beating now Bandy, and that's towards the end of his career. But there it is, 10-8 in the fifth. At some point, that break point that he was not able to challenge cost him the match for sure.
I remember exactly where I was watching that. I'd already lost in Australia, and I was home, and I was out at like a bar in Santa Monica, and you were playing late afternoon, so that would have been like 10 or 11 p.m. for us. And I remember it was like on the TV in the bar, and it was like deep in the fifth, and I'm just like locked in, and people are trying to talk. I'm like, quiet, quiet. Like, it's, you know, it's, it's 8, 9, 15, 30. And I remember like seeing that controversy, but the sound wasn't on, so I couldn't really tell what was going on.
Yeah, Kader Nooney was the umpire. We just got that beautiful voice. Yes. I owe him. No, I'm kidding. But he didn't. It was a case of Nalbandi didn't, it wasn't verbal with his challenge initially. Went like that. Umpire didn't see it. So worked in my favor there. I got very lucky. But that match, I didn't really play, never had like a great Aussie Open, but like that match was probably the best memory of my time down there.
I think you think if we asked Nalbandi his worst moment of the Australian Open, he says that one?
Probably not. He's probably lost semifinals.
Yeah, you're right. What was you're right. Some random like third round loss to Isner when he's 36 years old. I'm trying to find, like, I never really had like a bad Australian Open memory. It's kind of a, even when I lost, like I just lost and flew home, and it was, I was always like in a pretty good mood down
there. Your first year, like 2000, maybe it wasn't 2007, but 2008, you made like round of 16 or something, didn't you?
No, I never made round of 16 there.
Really, third round.
I made third round like eight times and just couldn't. Yeah. But in third rounds, I lost to like Tommy Robredo when he was top 10. I lost to Murray. I lost to Djokovic. I lost to Wawrinka. Yeah. Similar to like Stevie gets like brutal third rounds at the French. I was getting them at the.
Yeah.
I was constantly ranked like, you're seated 28 and kept drawing a brutal guy in the third round. I couldn't, yeah.
I don't know. I just like, for me, if the Aussie Open, like, I always really disliked the outside court. Did you not find those courts like so lightning fast? And they were so like, fast. It's like they don't even resurface them. It seems like they're like,
I don't think they do.
And like they're slick. I don't think they do either. The center courts, which, you know, obviously I'm not going to play my first round on Laver or, you know, Hisense Arena. Yeah, I just like, I know those courts were always, everyone's like, oh, yeah, those courts are pretty playable, very slow. The outer courts were just grease lightning out there.
Lightning fast. I had a couple good like first or second rounds there against guys like that shouldn't be playing on fast hard courts. So like, I was always happy with those courts. So for me, it made sense, but.
Stevie beat Bellucci one time out on one of those courts in an hour and 5 minutes.
Bellucci on those courts, like Santiago Giraldo on those courts, Del Bonis on those courts. Like, I was like, those were one of the few matches I walked into. I was like, I'm going to be fine today. Like, this is, we are going to be all right.
When you have that chip backhand that you can just always go to and like you don't get tight on fast courts, it's a good thing.
It helps. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but no bad memories down there, I don't think. It was always just, I don't know, I enjoyed Australia. Contrary to the fourth pod member who's not here talking about it right now, I enjoyed the Australian Open. I really liked being down there on South Bank, on the river, like walking to dinners by the Crown.
Same.
It was a great start to the year for me. I always loved Melbourne. So,
did you? Where would you stay, Steve? I always stayed at the Hyatt. I liked getting on that bus that ran every 20 minutes. Stevie, did you rent an apartment or?
I rented. For me, I always, well, not always. I would say six or seven of the 10, 11 years, whatever it was, I rented like a 2 or 3 bedroom apartment right next to the Crown Plaza, because it was in like an area I really liked. It was super convenient. There was like a little market downstairs. So like I would, cause I'd love to make breakfast, kind of make my own food in the morning. So for me, it was easy. I just got to stay in my own place, you know, make breakfast. So I love the apartment. There was washer and dryer, like all the little OCD nerdy things that I do. And I know John enjoys as well. It was great for me to be in that. And I'm not somebody when I go to hotels, like I'm a do not disturb on the door. I do not want anyone in there. No maids, no cleaning service. Like leave me alone for the extent of my stay. Like, I will clean it myself. So, the apartment was great for me, but I
did you make that bed behind you?
Oh, yeah. Every day, dude. Like, I can't.
You made that bed?
Yeah.
And did you do that with the pillows, you know, like in the middle?
Yeah, you've got to karate chop it in half.
Yeah. Wow. Well done.
Yeah. So that's how I did it. And I ultimately ended up one day, usually the last day, at the Hyatt where John would stay. Unbelievable breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Like full buffet, but like you can get real naughty in there. So after I lost, like the next day, I would just slap home like 42 pancakes and then hop on a 14-hour flight and just feel terrible all the way home. But that's kind of what I did.
I would say one of my favorite times in Melbourne wasn't the Aussie Open. I actually was part of the Davis Cup team. We went back to Melbourne like 5 weeks after the tournament. So it was very weird getting on a plane, going back and playing at Kooyong, Sam. We played on a grass court at Kooyong. But being there like in early March, late whatever it was, I thought was, I don't know, I just really, really enjoyed it. And as you know, being a part like the Davis Cup team, it's like leave your wallet in the safe. Everything's taken care of. It's just a great time to be a part of it. It's one of the few times we've spoken about like you're a part of a team. It feels great.
Plus, you guys won too.
Yeah. We won. Yeah, it was good. You were there in Brisbane. You were there, right?
Sam? We went back a couple years later to Brisbane. Me.
Yeah. It was the four of us and Jack.
And Jack. Or the three of us and Jack. Yeah. We lost.
That's exactly right. It was all because it was a weird quirk in the system where the United States in the 90s played Australia two times in a row in the U.S. So we had to, you know, pay the penance for that. So when we finally drew Australia again, we had to go back-to-back time. So I played the first one in Melbourne. You guys went there. And then we were all there in Brisbane. We didn't have as good of a time because Nick Kyrgios played incredibly well that tie and kind of took over. But I don't know. Like, it was cool being back in Australia, not during the Aussie Summer of Tennis, as they call it. I enjoyed it.
I did enjoy that actually as well.
Yeah. And Brisbane's cool. I feel like a lot of the world doesn't realize that like Brisbane's like a major city with like a bustling downtown and nice river that goes through and like nice amenities. Everyone only talks about Melbourne and Sydney, but Brisbane's incredible. And I think the Olympics are there, right? And like 8 years or something?
I think it's 32, if I'm not mistaken.
Brisbane's the host city?
Of the Summer Olympics, I think. And I think,
Wow, I just figured they might play in different spots, but they're the host.
I believe so, yeah.
Brisbane 32. Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I got another, you know, kind of really, it's maybe my most memorable moment in Australia, and it has nothing to do with singles. It has Sam and I were playing doubles, whatever year it was. We were playing Simone Bolelli and Fabio Fognini. And for those of you who don't know the layout of Australia, there's like all the outside courts. There's one so far in the back that it's like basically in Sydney. Like you are so far away from like the actual stadiums. So Sam and I want to say, do you remember if it was first or second round, Sam?
I think
like,
second.
It doesn't matter. It was like early. And Sam is wearing his Fila stuff with like this big stripe like through the middle and like, midway through the first set, like, I thought, I was convinced it had broke because, like, it was just splitting right here. So Sam was kind of, like, half, like, an eighth topless. Like, his just, like, chest was hanging out.
Just on the one side.
Just on the one side. And I'm like, Sam, like, on a changeover, I'm like, hey, buddy, like, I think your shirt's messed up. Like, he goes, no. It's the design, right? Like, it's totally, like, I'm like, I've seen other guys wear this, like, throughout the week because you also have the same stuff. And I'm like, I haven't seen anybody else's nipples, quite frankly, like while they're playing. So like we're playing and but while this whole thing is going on, like we're playing, you know, Fabio Fognini, an absolute classic clown entertainer, whatever you want to call him. Like there's six people watching this first round doubles match. He's having a conversation the whole time with somebody in the stands. Sam and I are like arguing over his shirt being broken and not being broken. Like there is no tennis being played. And then, lo and behold, like 2 weeks later, like Bolelli Fognini won the tournament. So
they won the tournament that year.
Yeah, they titled. So it's just funny, but yeah, it was a great comical 90 minutes of Sam, and he never changed his shirt, not once the entire match. He kept it.
I thought it was part of the design. Like this part, like this nipple would like flap out.
So bad.
I was like, no, I think they designed it to get some like wind in there because it's hot. You're in Australia.
It was bad.
Were your other shirts like that, or was it just the one?
He didn't pull another one out the whole time.
You had more of those shirts, right?
I had more of the shirts. I was just convinced that was the design.
Okay.
It was bad, but it was a fun doubles match, to say the least. Entertaining. All right, everyone, that is it for us on episode 25. Jack is up for trivia this week. But before we get to that, do not forget to follow Nothing Major on all of our social media platforms. Our handle is at Nothing Major Pod. And for all you moochers listening and watching each week without subscribing, shame on you. We need you guys to subscribe, like, leave a rating, a review, whatever it is you guys got to do. Apple, Spotify, wherever you find those podcasts. The audio podcast drops every Friday and full-length videos every Monday on YouTube. And for that, it is Jack's turn to stump us on trivia.
To finish this episode, episode 25, we're going to do our new trivia segment. It's my turn to host trivia. And the question is, since the year 1970, there's been 9 Americans to have won the Australian Open. Can you name them? 1 minute starts.
Are we going team effort here, Jack, or...
I think that's worked best. So
only men, right?
Men's singles. Sorry. 9 men that have won the Australian Open.
Minute.
Wait. Yep. Hold up. I got you.
Okay. We'll get the obvious ones out of the way here.
Don't think. Right. Don't think. We're going.
Andre, Pete, Jim.
Courier.
Yeah. All right. McEnroe.
McEnroe. Connors.
McEnroe's not.
McEnroe never won it.
Oh, dang it, Mac. Screwed us.
I don't know. We'll go old.
We stink.
Arthur Ashe.
Yes.
Oh, no way. Good one, Stevie.
Thought he was.
That's 6. There's only one more.
Oh. You need 3 more. 5, 4, 3, okay, 2, 1.
There's 9?
Are we missing anyone good?
No. Yes. No.
Well, I guess they're good.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. They want to slam, but.
Actually, there's. Because we have a Johan Kriek.
I knew he won the, but I didn't know he won the Australian Open. I thought about him, but he was.
When did he win
the American flag then?
I thought he was South African.
This is what I'm getting from Charlie.
It's a sneaky one. The second time he won it twice, back to back years, and he was an American.
That's what, I knew he won the tournament, and I know he lives in the United States now, but I did not, like, I wasn't.
Okay, all right. Roscoe Tanner.
Okay.
That's tough.
We have a Vitas Gerulaitis.
Yeah,
I wasn't gonna get that either.
Yes, but
I wasn't gonna get that. Yeah.
Brian Teacher.
No, I wasn't gonna get Brian. All right, well, we got the ones that we thought we should get.
Yeah.
We're basic.
We are basic.
Stump
we're not
the
tennis
pod.
Historians.
We got it.
Stump the pod. Stump the Schwab. Stump the pod.
Yeah, you got it.
That's good.
That's why I said
it. Well, we are stumped.
Sorry.